Tracy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to a Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, the Mercy Sisters, social justice, or the Catholic Church. Today, my visitor is Pat Lyth. Pat, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you.
Pat is originally from Hamilton, New Zealand, and for many years she was the leader of the Pastoral and Parish Services Group of the Catholic Diocese of Auckland. The pastoral office serves the three levels of pastoral councils in the diocese, the parish councils, the regional councils, and the diocesan council. She has also been involved in ecumenism and especially in the Methodist Catholic Dialogue. Pat retired from her position in the diocese a few months ago. Pat, you have recently retired after many years of active service, active involvement in the area of pastoral and parish services within the diocese. What are some of the developments you have experienced throughout these years?
Interesting. I started in 92, and quite a lot of the parishes didn't have parish pastoral councils. And the bishops of, all of the bishops of Auckland since De Laghi have encouraged, they've actually made them mandatory in the diocese. But quite often the pastoral councils didn't understand their roles. So the first part of the of my work there was actually getting them to understand their roles. And of course, because parishes are so different, you know, they range from a Sunday mass count of maybe 15 in a small rural parish to 2,000 in the cathedral. You have to adapt the parish council structure to the parish, and then some parishes, over the time, many of the parishes have actually employed staff. But again, it's only the bigger parishes that can afford to do that. And so that takes some of the burden, if you like, or some of the roles away from the pastoral council. So it's getting the pastoral council to understand the roles. And that sort of worked out, and we did some guidelines, and that worked out quite well. And then a whole lot of things changed. I think the weekend Sunday shopping and Sunday work has changed the nature of volunteering. Shift work and kids going to things in the afternoon, women going back to work earlier after they've had their children, has all removed a lot of the volunteers we used to have. And so it's getting quite difficult to have people volunteer to do the pastoral work. Another change is the change in the personnel. Migrants, both priests and people. So half of the church in Auckland are people not born in New Zealand, which is a great diversity and a great richness, but they come with different understandings of church. So you really have to take each parish on its own. You can't make a template and say, this is the way you go. So you sort of go and sit down with a parish and work with the people who have volunteered and find out how you can best, how they can best help the priest with the pastoral care of the people. That's one thing.
Is the setup of parish council, is that connected to the Vatican II? Does that come out of the papers of the Vatican II?
The Vatican doesn't make it mandatory, but says they're a good idea. So the bishops made it mandatory.
Yeah.
The only things that are mandatory from the Vatican are finance committees to look after the finance. And that's another issue. Quite often the two get mixed up. And quite often nowadays we get people volunteering to be on the pastoral council who have come from quite high up management positions in their work. And so they think they're managing the parish. And it's not a managing role, really. It's a pastoral care role. And the pastoral part keeps getting lost. You know, pastoral, what is best for the people? How can we best provide a spiritual input for the people? And that's what pastoral councils are about. And it can be quite tricky.
I know some parishes outside of New Zealand where the pastoral council is 100% women and the finance committee is 100% men. Which gives some indication of when you say the managing the finances, yeah, and the interests, and the pastoral council also has a lot of different talents.
Yeah. Delaghi, who set all of these structures up in the first place, made it, one of the principles was that there should be equal numbers of men and women on the pastoral council. I mean, that sort of got lost now because it's not as important as it was. That was because there were always men on the council and no women. And now, quite often, it's been all, as you say, all women and no men. But most of them are mixed. Finance committees are mixed as well.
Yeah. For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are on Friday. We are on air every Friday morning at 8:40 on Planet FM 104.6. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or send us an email or check out our website or Facebook page, Te Ngaka Wai Ora, Mercy Spirituality Center. Today my visitor is Pat Leith. Pat was the leader of the diocesan and parish and pastoral group, and we've been talking about pastoral councils and finance committees and all these, the organizations behind a parish. Pat, you also mentioned the different ethnic groups. The priests come from different countries and the people are from different countries. It's not that the parish priest today would go and celebrate Mass and disappear. There is a lot more behind what the normal person who would only go on Sundays and leave afterwards. They would not see what's happening.
That's right.
The rest
that's
of the
right.
week.
Yeah. It's a whole new scene, really. In the last 10 years, it's actually got even more and more complicated as we've got more and more religious order priests come. And they have a set charism to which they adhere. And that can sometimes come over the top of what the diocese wants as its pastoral plan. So there's that complication. There's the complication in that some priests come from countries where they aren't used to collaborating with lay people in a pastoral council role. And so you have to sort of work, you know, tactfully around those issues. There are other issues where you have a Pacifica priest, where the parish is largely Pacifica, and its particular group might want to adopt that priest. It happens with the Filipinos as well, that like the Filipino, a large Filipino group in a parish sort of adopts the parish priest, and some of the other parishioners feel as though they're being marginalised. A lot of it is actually in the communication and in the talking around it and in the sharing of what the different groups see as church, and I think that's something that actually needs to be done more needs to be done about it, because quite often a parish will have an event which showcases a dance or a song from each of the ethnic groups, but they actually haven't talked about their model of church, and that would be a really interesting workshop to have, that every parish and all of the people in the parish from whichever country talked about what their model of church was and how it does or does not fit in with the New Zealand one, and how we can adapt our model and their model to come up with something that suits everybody.
Yeah. And also sharing the culture a bit.
Yeah.
That's what I've been trying with some interviews of people from different ethnic backgrounds telling us about their traditions around Christmas or Easter.
Yeah. I understand you went to synagogue last weekend.
Yes, I did.
I mean, that's a huge cultural devotion, if you like, which most parishes don't know anything about. And, you know, it needs to be sort of shared and talked about.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a very special feast for the Filipinos.
That's right.
And so when the priests come into the country, they would get like an introduction into the guidelines. And what about the parishioners, those who step up on any council, would they get guidelines? Would they have an introduction?
There is a booklet of guidelines, but as I said before, one template doesn't fit all. Every parish is able to have somebody come out and facilitate their their planning. But they, some of them take advantage of that and some don't.
Yeah.
So they can tap into the pastoral services group in the diocese.
So the offer is there.
Yeah, yeah. And they'll come out and do a day or an evening or a weekend, whatever the parish suits. It's really crucial, though, that the priest is there too at the same time, that it's not just the lay people that do this formation, because it's talking about collaboration, if you like. Collaboration is important.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's changed, really, is it's not just pastoral care of the people in the parish. It's actually training people to be evangelizers or mission disciples, getting parishes to think outside the square, outside their little circle, their community. So for so long, we've actually concentrated on building good ecclesial communities so that we know what's happening among our parishioners, but we've forgotten about the fact that we're supposed to be bringing in lots more people. We're supposed to be spreading the good news. Yeah. And that's something that the Fit for Mission Pastoral Plan is about, but it's a really slow process because we're not used to sharing our faith, and we don't know how to do it. We don't know what to invite people to, all of those things.
And then also because you've been involved in ecumenism also,
yep.
And some parishes work very well together with the neighboring churches.
Yes.
And do something together to get to know each other.
Yes.
It's also getting out of your comfort zone, and that can contribute to widening your horizon.
It can.
And at the same time involve people who might be having two or three different denominations in one family.
Yep. And that's also can be a tricky one, because some of the people from other countries or the priests from other countries are not used to working with other denominations, see it as being quite threatening. So, you know, again, that's another barrier to break down. It's quite, you know, there are lots of sort of hurdles or obstacles to go over before you can do that. I know that you and I are from the same parish, and we have the Good Friday Walk, which is really, and that was a lay person who started that idea. And
that was about 20 years ago.
It was about 20 years ago. And that's probably the only thing that we really do annually, consistently. We do other bits and pieces, but that's really good because we understand that. And lots of parishes have got onto that one. That's something that's really good. But there's a World Day of Prayer. There are a whole lot of things that we can do together that we're not doing together. But ecumenism drops off the bottom of the list in a parish council list of tasks to do because they're so busy building their own community, really.
And then also we have different faiths, different denominations,
yes.
And different parishes also. So there is also cooperation between some parishes, isn't there?
Yeah, that's fallen over largely. We had a time when we had a whole lot of pastoral areas, so parishes were grouped. So there are 67 parishes in the diocese, and they were grouped into 23 pastoral areas. Most parishes were in groups of three or four parishes, and they were going to do things like adult formation together, maybe RCIA together, maybe children's CCD classes together. But it worked originally when the priests were on board. But what has happened has been there have been a lot of priests shift around and move, and the ones from overseas, it takes them a little while to get their feet under the table, so they can't really, you know, add on to their list of things to do cooperation with another parish. So again, we've got to start again slowly to build that up. And some places it's working, particularly where there's an order of priests, like the Redemptorists have Mungaree Bridge and Mungaree East, and so they work together. The Salesians have Avondale and
Massey,
and they work together. And the Capuchins have Glen Eden and Henderson, so they work together because the priests live together and understand what's going on.
They would discuss what they are planning together.
That's right. So that makes it easier. But and in the countryside, it works better too because there's so few people, so they need to work with one another. But in ordinary most of the city parishes, it's fallen over a bit.
It's like in our spirituality center, we have some education programs that have to do like with Bible teachings,
yep,
theology, and different topics. And sometimes we have people, especially from the smaller parishes, coming because they can't set up anything by themselves. Whereas the bigger parishes, they might set up something themselves. But then I think it's also good if you, even if you're from a bigger parish, if you can step out of your comfort zone and go to a neutral place and meet some people,
yes,
from other parishes,
yes,
and get to know what they are doing. Because otherwise, I think that the communication is mainly on the levels of councils.
Yes.
And then they are representatives, yes, and it's different to the
people meeting other people.
Exactly.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, and I think it just boils down to the fact that we don't advertise those things enough. Like, say, I'm on the North Shore, Takapuna and Northcote are two big parishes nearby. They could advertise the courses they run in our bulletin. And, you know, we would take a car full of people. We've done that in the past, but they don't advertise enough. There's not enough communication about those things. They don't think about inviting other people.
Sometimes at the centre I have conversation with people who are missing something, and one lady told me she would really like to have some training on Psalms. And then I asked Father Chris Skinner, would you mind doing a music workshop? And he said, oh yes. So he's going to come on the 23rd of February, and he's going to concentrate on Psalms of Gratitude for this church here, the Year of Seed.
Yes, yeah.
And I think that's another opportunity where people can come together and can exchange their backgrounds or what they are doing in the church, and to sing psalms together, train maybe new songs.
Yeah, no, that's a really good idea. One of the other difficulties with that kind of thing is that the traffic in Auckland has become a nightmare, and people are not coming to evening courses anymore, because by the time they get home from work, it's an hour, and if they've got to go another hour to get back into town or to go somewhere for a course, it's just not worth it. So we found that evening courses have fallen right off. So weekend ones aren't too bad, but again, that doesn't get the people who are working.
Well, like, yeah, when you have a Saturday,
yeah,
there are lots of families who have sports on.
Exactly. Exactly.
But then there's never the right time.
I know. But there used to be. And we have to work out ways of getting around that. I guess some of it will be online stuff. But they're not meeting people if you do it online.
Oh. So I don't think that it can replace it.
It can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So, yeah,
it's tricky. Those who live in the peripheries, they can listen to our interviews. So they connect somehow,
right,
and
yeah,
then they can decide, okay, for this special event, I will come to Auckland. And it's the same for people who can't move so much. But on the other hand, the connecting, personal connection is so important, because there's such a huge,
yeah,
so much information.
Yeah.
You,
yeah,
can read your whole,
yeah,
life.
Exactly, exactly.
But how do you find the right thing? And then you might read through pages and pages until you come to the thing that is interesting for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that with, and coming back to the guidelines of the councils, so the parish councils and the finance committees, they have guidelines.
Yes.
So the guidelines are not laws, they are guidelines.
They're guidelines.
But so every parish can say, well, I'd like to, we should shift this a little bit because we have this and this ethnic group, and they are not happy with that point. Has there also been some feedback from parishes saying, I like your guidelines, but there are something that would be good if it was changed?
Well, we keep adapting them.
Mm-hmm.
The last adaption was 2017.
Oh, that's quite current.
So it's quite current. We do. We keep revising them. Probably every 10 years. I think I've done 3 revisions in my time.
Yeah.
Because of that, and again, they are only guidelines and suggestions. Although the finance things are actually norms.
Okay.
From the diocese. Yes. So you've got to.
And are they
be careful around your money
and the finance rules? Norms,
yes.
Are they the same in every diocese, or are they specific for every diocese?
They're specific for every diocese.
Is there something, are they oriented towards a higher law, some like a national law or
canon
the canon law?
Yeah. Canon law, okay. Yeah. Like, you know, there's a certain, but canon law doesn't actually set the financial limit. But the norms set the financial limit that the priest can spend without consultation, or the finance committee can spend without consultation, and then you've got to go to the diocese. You know, so each diocese sets its own limit.
Yeah.
Limits, but the principles are there is a certain amount of money that you can't spend without consultation or without approval of a higher group.
So just to summarise, the finance committee is appointed by the priest, correct?
Yes, for its expertise. So the people need to know.
Understand something of finance.
Yes, exactly.
They should not have, yeah. And then we have the pastor, and they are quite singular. They are just with the parish.
Yes.
Whereas the pastoral council has then a regional pastoral council and a diocesan council.
The pastoral council is a parish pastoral council, and in three of the six regions, there's a regional pastoral council as well, which has a couple of reps from each pastoral council on it. The other three regions, that they've fallen over. They haven't managed to get themselves back together again.
And then the regional they report to the diocese, and they have representatives of the diocesan pastoral council.
The diocesan pastoral council has two representatives of each of the regions in the diocese. They're not necessarily on the regional pastoral council, because there isn't always a regional pastoral council. But they need to report back to their regional parishes.
And there are also some ethnic representatives?
Five ethnic representatives, two Maori representatives, two youth representatives, two religious representatives, and a priest representative. So there are 27 people on the Diocesan Pastoral Council.
And the so other ethnicities like Korean and Samoan?
Samoan, Tongan, Filipino, Chinese and Korean. But that can change. The bishop can change that selection. Previously there was Cook Island, and previously there was also, don't know what else there was.
Well, it depends a little bit of the makeup
of the community. Yeah, yep.
Because if you were in the 1960s, you might have had a Dutch representative, and today from another country.
And for example, there's probably more new Indian Catholic migrants now, but the Indians are from all over, and so there isn't an Indian ethnic community. As such, it's not set up as a chaplaincy, whereas the others are, because they're from Fiji, and when they come from India, they're from different parts of India, and they're from Malaysia, and they're from whatever. So they don't have a chaplaincy. So it's the chaplaincy groups, the ethnic groups that have formed themselves into a chaplaincy. Like, for example, there's still a Polish chaplaincy. That's been one right through. The Dutch didn't want chaplaincy. They said, we want to be integrated.
Good.
When they first came, so they've never had a chaplaincy.
And the Irish didn't need one?
No, the Irish didn't need one, because all the priests were Irish. And we were an Irish church, really.
Yeah.
But we've changed. Yeah, totally.
So the role of the DPC is to report to the bishop, is that correct?
No, it's to advise the bishop.
To advise the bishop.
They do furnish overall reports from the regions, but that's not the main role. The main role is to hear the bishop's concerns and to offer him their opinions on the things that he is concerned about from their experience and their lay experience, because he also has the Council of Priests. So, and quite often the the advice or the consultation he has is different from what he would get from the priests, because they have a different point of view.
Yeah, different concerns.
That's right.
Different life.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And so part of the session for Diocesan Pastoral Council meetings is reflection on usually a church document, or it will be on the Pope's World Youth Day report, I would imagine, this time. But also they have somebody come in from the diocese and talk about the particular services they offer so that they can go back to the parishes and tell them, because despite the fact that all of the diocesan offices are advertised in the directory and in the, you know, all over the place, people still don't know. Like with Mercy Spirituality Centre, people still don't know.
Well,
we've got to keep talking about
we
it.
We have to keep talking. Because
yeah.
Well, fortunately, it is better known now.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yes.
And I think that we have wonderful programs, and we are always happy to get some ideas.
Yep.
Like this lady with the sounds.
Yes,
and
yep.
I think that's good.
Yes.
Because she, I don't remember what parish she was from, but they might not have been able to do anything big in the parish. But now with Father Chris, we'll do something and everybody can come.
Yep.
There's now a restriction.
Yep.
And, And for these three, so if somebody has something to communicate to the DPC, they go to their own rep and
yes.
then go to the rep would bring
yep.
it forward to the DPC
yep.
member.
Yep, yep.
And the DPC member, in a way, gets formation at every event that...
Yes, yes.
At the meetings.
Yep. So even if they've got no theology background or anything, they actually get familiar with the way the church operates and with church documents and church teachings. Most people love being on the Dyson Pastoral Council because they say it's like going on a retreat every weekend.
And they report then back to the RPC.
They're supposed to.
They're supposed to.
Yeah, they do with a newsletter.
Yeah.
Because some parishes aren't interested. This is what I mean. You know, parishes sort of, they get into their own little
world
community and their own little world, and they aren't interested in other things until something happens.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, oh, we didn't know that. I've been telling you that for the last 5 years, sort of thing.
Yes. Well, people all have busy lives.
They do.
And, well, we'll see what the next motto will be. We are still in fit for mission.
We are.
Until 2019.
Yep.
Yeah. So there will be some news coming up. Thank you very much for all this background. And I hope that people who are listening now understand better what the meaning of these councils are, because I think that they are really meant as a support
mm-hmm.
and as a way to be part of the community in all aspects.
Yep.
Thank you very much, Pat, and I wish you all the best for your new retirement.
I'm still getting used to what that means. I keep feeling I'm wasting time.
Well, you can come to the Spirituality Centre.
Yeah.
And we have some events coming up on Saturday, the 16th of February, from 9:30 to 3:30. We'll have Sarah Cooper, who will facilitate a retreat day with the title Rediscovering Wholeness of Life in Christ, How Gratitude Opens the Way. 1 week later, we will offer the morning with Father Chris Skinner that I mentioned, and he will share and teach a number of his musical settings to the Psalms with a theme of gratitude. This workshop will take place at St. Columba Center in Vermont Street, Ponsonby, so you don't have to go all the way to Epsom if you're from the North Shore. It's on Saturday, the 23rd of February, from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. On the 22nd and 23rd of February, we have Margaret Bowater coming to the center, who is going to facilitate an introduction into dream work. And on Friday, the 1st of March, 7 to 9 p.m., Sister Elizabeth Snedden will give a presentation on Julian of Norwich with the title Love Poured Out, Grateful for God's Goodness. And you can see our theme for 2019
is gratitude.
Gratitude, correct. For all events at our centre, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycentre.org.nz. And thank you very much, Pat, for having come. And I wish everybody a blessed Friday and a wonderful week ahead. We're on our journey.